The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to today's Inspiring Women with your host, Deanne DeMarco. On today's program, you'll meet the next business and entrepreneurial rising star. You'll learn from their successes, challenges, and life lessons to find out what has made them recognized in their fields. Now, here is your host, Deanne DeMarco.
Welcome to today's Inspiring Women. I'm your host, Deanne DeMarco. And if you're interested in becoming a sponsor for the show, give us a call at 708-836-0118. We have a number of different sponsorship opportunities that fit all levels of budgets. First of all, as we're getting started here, I'd like to thank my listeners for being a part of our show from every week. Without you, we would not have a show. So I'd like to thank you. I'll tell you, if you are ready to take the next steps to become empowered and motivated and better quick for success, then stay tuned. Today we have a fantastic show. Our first guest is retired Colonel Jill Morgenthaler, who is a woman of many firsts. She was one of the first women to enter ROTC and train as an equal with men. She's one of the first women battalion commanders in the 88th Regional Support Command. She was one of the first women brigade commanders in the 84th Division. And she was one of the first women Homeland Security advisors for the state of Illinois. Colonel Jill handled disaster recovery during the San Francisco earthquake, and I was in San Francisco during that earthquake. So, Colonel Jill, thank you very much. She's worked as a peacekeeper in Bosnia and helped shelter Kosovar refugees. In Iraq, she ran the strategic communication for the internal forces. And during this time, she faced down Saddam Hussein. Yeah. And for her performance in Iraq in 2004, she received the Bronze Star. And upon retirement from the Army, she was awarded the Legion of Merit. Whoa. Colonel Jill, welcome to today's Inspiring Women.
Oh, thank you, Deanne.
You know, I was in that earthquake. I was really glad somebody was in charge.
I know, and I just had a baby, actually. I remember handing him over to my husband going, I have to report. Good luck.
And I'm so glad you did. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that was a scary time. Yeah. But anyway, what I'd like to, you just have had such an interesting career. One of the things that I think that's at the forefront of my brain is, what made you decide on a military career?
Well, you know, when I was a little girl, I wanted to be a fireman. They didn't have firefighters then, they only had firemen. And I remember everybody would laugh at me, and I wanted to be a priest, and everybody would laugh at me, and a police officer, and they'd all laugh. So, I mean, I knew I wanted, you know, a non-traditional career without even knowing what that meant. And then my father was a career Marine, and I watched him serve overseas, save lives, bring freedoms, and then I watched him do some intelligence work at the Pentagon, and I thought it was so cool. And he's the one who told me when they opened up ROTC across 10 campuses as an experiment. He told me about it, and then I didn't say anything. I just kind of, okay, Dad, thanks. And then one day at Penn State, I just walked up to the military building and went in and said, I want to be a military intelligence. I want to join the Army. And they're like, sure, sign here. And next thing, I had a four-year scholarship, and the rest is history.
Wow. And how did your mom deal with all this?
You know, my mom was great. My mom really wanted me in a non-traditional career. I mean, she kept raising me with, hey, you know, you can be anything you want to be. However, I think it hit her really hard many, many, many years later when I was serving in Iraq, and I would call home. You know, here I was a colonel. I'd call home, and she'd start to cry, and I'm like, Mom, I'm a colonel. I'm not standing an outpost, you know, in Fallujah. And she's like, but you're still my little girl. I'm like, okay, I guess so. So it was funny because, you know, she really encouraged me, and then she definitely had her mixed feelings about it.
Yeah, I think if I had my daughter say that she wanted to join the military, even in today's day and age, I think I'd be really, I'd take like a super deep breath around that, and I go, whoa, you know, I don't know. You have had a very interesting military path. How did you get to colonel? So where did you start, and how did that career path work for you?
Well, so right after college, I was made a second lieutenant in intelligence, and I actually served first over in South Korea during some very tenseful, exciting times. And then I would transfer to Germany, where I continued doing military intelligence in Germany and up in Berlin, which was surrounded by East Germany. And then I was getting restless, and I decided to get off of active duty and try what we call the real world, but stay in the reserve. So I ended up going to graduate school out in California, but I stayed in the reserves. And what I found is I got great satisfaction. I love being in the Army Reserve because I got to serve. I kept going overseas. I went to Hawaii. I went to Thailand. Went back to Europe. I went to served in Bosnia and later in Iraq. But I also I ended up getting married and was able to raise my family. And we ended up in the Midwest and raised them in just one place where they weren't moving every few years the way I did. And so to me, it was kind of a perfect combination. I chose a civilian career that basically I kept low key so I could be a hard driving officer. You know, and sooner or later, you kind of have to take one decision or another. Is it going to be the civilian career or the Army career? And I chose the Army career and because that's where I got my personal satisfaction. And I had a great husband. I have a great husband who supported me when I was, you know, called up for Bosnia and when I was called up for Iraq. You know, he took on the burden of making sure he kept the kids alive and the pets alive.
Wow. And that, I would think that would be a very difficult job for him as well, knowing that he is married a military professional.
Yeah, and I was really lucky because he thought it was so cool, first of all, dating someone in the military, which, trust me, back in the 80s, that was not necessarily something cool to go out with a woman in the military. But he thought it was cool. And when I finally made colonel, he was so proud of me. He was more proud of me than I was. And it actually took me by surprise, you know, after many years of marriage, you think you know each other. And there he was, just bursting with pride. And so I was just really blessed to find a man who truly believed in what I was doing and supported me.
You know, in corporate America, we talk about the balance of work-life, you know, and balancing a home life, family life, and work, too. I mean, your work-life balance is so totally different being in the military, because when you're called to work, you're gone, right?
Yes, and yeah, and you don't know how long you're gone either, you know, because once they put you on orders, they got you. And this is where, when I went off to Bosnia, my son was 6 and my daughter was 4, and this was the first separation. And luckily, besides my husband, his sister lived in the area. She stepped in, and my church in Des Plaines, Illinois, really stepped in, too. They would bring by a hot meal. Sometimes someone would babysit, so Carrie, if he had to go back to work, he could. Some of the women would take my daughter out shopping because she just really missed the girl time. And so by having a wonderful support system, it made it easier for me to focus on what I was doing and lowered the guilt. I mean, there's still, you know, worry, what am I doing to my family? But when I had such a great support system, it's like, you know what, I am saving lives here, and they're surviving. They'll be okay because I have great people watching out for them.
Now, I mean, did you, before you married this wonderful man, did you talk about this beforehand? And how
you're making me go back 26 years now.
I was just kind of curious. I mean,
he knew I wanted children.
Uh-huh.
And so, and once the first Iraq war, when that came up, I had just had my son, Neil, and so we knew it was a possibility. In fact, I got word I was going to be the second wave. So we started putting things in place then, and wow. Carrie just understood. Now, I didn't go that first war because we had no second wave. The war was over so quickly. But that really made us realize that, hey, this is real. We got to get ready. And then so when Bosnia happened and I was called up pretty quickly, it was hard on us because we didn't know what it meant, but we also were better prepared ahead of time.
Got it. Well, I just had to ask that because, you know, I get questions from women all the time of how do I balance work and life? And I'm going, you've got that problem magnified, you know, based upon the specific job that you had. And one of the things I do need to talk to you about is when you were in ROTC and you trained equal as men, and this was a trial.
Right. It was actually an experiment.
An experiment.
Yeah.
Did you have to deal with, like, some harassment?
Oh, my gosh. Some. You know, we didn't even have that word harassment, but that's what it was. And it was constantly. I mean, luckily, my father warned me before I headed off to boot camp. I have to say, I did Penn State ROTC, and there the instructors, the officers enlisted were all very professional. So I really wasn't ready for the harassment. I mean, I would hear some things from guys, well, you know, in the men's army, you know. But when I got down to summer camp at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and the following year, women were going to come to West Point, and there was a lot of West Point officers furious about it. They couldn't stop it. So there we were, and they just took it out on us. But being the daughter of a Marine officer, without realizing it, I had absorbed so much watching him in command. And when people crossed a line, I knew it, and I called them on it. And it took them by surprise. They weren't ready for that. And I thought, oh my gosh, I have such an advantage over, you know, all the other women who had no background. You know, because I wouldn't take it. I would be right back in their face, you know, letting my inner Marine come out, I guess, and just hang in there. And then I also lucked out. There were men there who wanted us to succeed. I had one fabulous drill sergeant, African-American Sergeant Sampson. He wanted us men and women. You know, he was a real leader. You leave no one behind. And so he watched my back. And so in a way, I knew that I could stand up to these people because, A, I knew how, and, B, I had somebody else watching my back for me.
Wow. Very interesting. Yeah, I just had to ask because I'm sure you had to be faced with. Now, did they have separate quarters for men and women back then?
Sometimes. I know when I was in Korea,
not.
In Korea, when I was stationed there, they didn't have quarters for women officers because they didn't have any. And all of a sudden, three of us show up on a post of, I don't know, 50,000 men. So they put us over in the field grade officers' quarters each of us as second lieutenants got our own room in this nice little hooch where all the other male officers are sharing bathrooms and everything. And they're taking it out on us once again. I'm looking at them going, look, I just went through 4 years of ROTC. I think you guys could have gotten ready for this. This is not a surprise. They put me in better quarters. Okay, I'll take it.
Wow. Well, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I've got to talk to you about Saddam Hussein. I know our audience is going to be dying to find out how that was all about. But right now, we're going to take a short break. And when you come back, we'll talk a little bit more with Colonel Jill. This is Deanne DeMarco with today's Inspiring Women.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
What would you do if you knew that you could not fail? The Dr. Pat Show with Dr. Pat Basile is a radio forum for some of the world's most influential people in the fields of health, wellness, and human potential. Dr. Pat brings together and introduces visionary scientists and futurists, environmentalists, educators, business leaders, inventors, filmmakers, authors, artists, mystics, and healers who inspire and support individual and collective growth and positive cultural shifts. This award-winning radio show empowers the listening community to be the change they want to see in the world. Tune in to the Voice America Empowerment Channel every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern for the Dr. Pat Show with Dr. Pat Basile, radio to thrive by.
Friend us on Facebook to keep up with what's empowering the world. Voice America Empowerment.
You are tuned into Today's Inspiring Women with Deanne DeMarco. We'd love to hear your questions and comments about our program. Please send an email to Deanne at deannedemarco.com. That's D-E-A-N-N-E at deannedemarco.com. Now, back to Today's Inspiring Women.
Welcome back. This is Deanne DeMarco with Today's Inspiring Women, and we are talking with Colonel Jill. And just before break, Colonel Jill was telling us all about her military career and got to talk to us about Saddam Hussein and how you faced him down. Tell us about that.
Well, Deanne, and I was sent over to Iraq in 2004, and I ran all the public affairs there for General Sanchez. Saddam Hussein was finally going before a judge on his crimes against humanity. So I ended up escorting the media into the courtroom. So into this small courtroom, I took Christina Amanpour, Peter Jennings, and Al Jazeera, et cetera, others. I'm waiting outside of the courtroom building. There's no room for me in the courtroom. I'm actually in civilian clothes that day. We were kind of downplaying the role of the military because we were transitioning Saddam Hussein. Well, the bus pulls up. And he climbs off the bus. He's in a suit, and his hands and his ankles are shackled. And he's walking in, and he's totally trembling, looking at the ground, trembling. And as he walked by me, I thought, oh, my gosh, he thinks he's going to die today. Have his hearing, get his execution today. I thought, oh, this will be interesting. So they took him into the courtroom. I'm waiting out in the hallway, and after a while, he realized he wasn't dying. He started threatening the judge's family, everybody in the courtroom. And finally, this very brave Iraqi judge kicked him out. Saddam Hussein comes out swaggering, and he finally sees me, and he checks me up and down. And it's like, ooh, no, I'm not a blonde bimbo waiting for you, dude. I don't think so. So I just started staring right back at him, and General Sanchez said when he looked into Saddam Hussein's eyes, he saw pure evil. So I'm looking, because I don't know what pure evil looks like, and I'm looking, I'm like, I don't know, but I sure do just see a dirty old man. So I just kept staring at him, and we just both kept staring, and neither one of us backing off. Finally, he barks something out in Arabic, and the guards burst out laughing. They start leading him to the bus, and I'm like, wait, what did he say? And one guard said, kill her. Excuse me? He used to execute people for staring at him. It's like, well, not this American. And wow. So I know people have mixed feelings about Iraq, but when I see the freedoms we brought there and I see that the women are safe again, I'm very proud of the little bit that I did over there.
Wow. What a story. What a story. You know, what are some of those secrets? You've been in this career for a long time, and as a woman in a military career, you know, start out as an experiment and you've succeeded very, very well. So what are some of the secrets that you would share with our listeners on how to be successful?
You know, one of the things is you need to get a thick skin. And, you know, because beginning of my career, I was called every name in the book, butch, bitch, bimbo, and that was only the letter B. And I had to let it roll off my back. I had to learn to let it go. And sometimes, as women, we don't. But you have to if you're going to lead. And so one thing I have taught women, and men, too, because sometimes men react inappropriately, and other times women just hold on to something, don't let it go, and it eats them up. And so it's Q-tip. Quit thinking it's personal. And I actually hand out Q-tips when I speak. And people can hold on to them, put them in their purse, hang them up in their office. But it's to remind yourself that when somebody's lashing out at you, it probably isn't personal. they're either reacting to something that happened to them, or they're just a very poor leader. And when people would scream at me, I would look at them and I would just think, this is about you, this isn't about me. And so I always kept a very cool demeanor. And that's something, as a leader, people have to know you can take it and that you'll respond professionally. So having a thick skin is a big one. Another one is for women especially, take credit for what you do. Too often, a woman will say, someone will say, oh, thank you, Janet, great job. And Janet will be like, well, really, it was, you know, Bill and Marty and everybody. You got to take credit. Because you did the work, and if you don't take credit, guess what? You're not going to go, you're not going to advance, you're not going to go forward. And this is hard. I have found this is hard for some women, it's hard for some ethnic groups, but you've got to be able to say, this is what I did, these are the accomplishments, these are the results. Because through that, then, people realize, ah, you're ready for the next step, and they won't overlook you. Another one is, often we don't ask for what we want. We hope everyone's going to sit there and go, oh, my gosh, isn't she great? Give her the next thing. But one day in my reserve unit, I watched this one guy get a plum job. I went up to the commander later, and I said, sir, was I considered for the job? And he said, no. You didn't tell me you wanted it. I mean, you're a mother. You've got a job. Oh. You've got this. You got that. I didn't know you wanted it. And I thought, stupid me. So you
interesting.
Have to, yeah, you have to ask for what you want. And an interesting statistic, men ask for the next job when they're about 20, 30% ready for it. Women wait till they're 80% ready. Guess what? The dude got the job. You're just getting older.
Wow. So
yeah,
I didn't know that.
Ask for it sooner, too. You know, get, you know, don't wait for your comfort zone. You know, get out there and do it now.
That is very interesting. Ask what you want, and men ask for it when they're only 20 to 30% ready, and women don't wait until they're 80%?
Exactly. And then you wonder why in a woman's field there's all these men bosses, because the women aren't asking for it timely.
That is very interesting. Well, now, did I cut you out? Was there a fourth one, or those are the three, top three?
Those were three.
Okay. I wasn't sure if I'd cut you off. That is, I think those are three really good ones. So the Q-tip, take credit for what you have done. But what I liked about that is state what you have done, but also state the results.
Right.
And I think we forget to state what the results have been.
Yes. Yes. So exactly what problem did you solve, and, you know, and what were the results from it? In fact, what I advise, I learned that a lot of men send their bosses emails many more times than women do, and I recommend you just put it on your calendar every other week. Just let your boss know what you've done. Send an email, hey, here was the problem, this is how I solved it. And then at the end of the year, you've got all of that that you can just pull out and put into your annual review. You also haven't disappeared off their screen either.
Excellent. Excellent idea. And then ask what you want. Now, you have a book that you're working on, right? Tell us about that.
Yes, I am working on a leadership book. It will take a lot of the leadership lessons I've learned and, you know, put them in such as today, into, you know, easy how-tos. So, you know, this is what happened to me. This is what I learned, usually the hard way. And this is how you can be a better leader much easier. So it'll capture a lot of the adventures I've had while showing men and women, it's for everybody, how to be a successful leader in much easier ways than, like I said, learning the hard way.
And I bet you got some great stories in there, too.
Yes. In fact, I've been able to get a literary agent, which is really exciting. And she told me, she goes, it's your stories that are really going to sell it. I'm like, cool. I've got a lot of those.
Yeah, I actually looked you up on YouTube, and some of your stories that came out over there were really, really interesting. Like the time that some guy threw himself over barbed wire and said you to walk over his back.
Yes, I'd run up his body. And I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm running on a human body here.
You know, I just thought that was really interesting and how they looked at you as being the weak link and it ended up that you were one of the stronger links. I just thought it was very, very interesting. So I think so do you have a title for the book yet?
You know, I have a working title, but I don't, I just learned it's been taken by another book. So it will not be From the Battlefield to the Boardroom.
Uh-huh.
People can find me at ColonelJill.com and I will, and you know, from there and LinkedIn and other places, of course, I will announce, you know, once we get to that point of publishing the book, what the title will be, and maybe you'll let me back on your radio show and I can promote it then.
Sure. Give me a call. Let me know. So what's the tentative time frame? 6 months? A year?
I think it's a year, Deanne. Okay. I've got all the chapters outlined. I've been pulling together my stories. And then the agent's very confident that she'll be able to market to one of the big publishing houses. So it's very exciting. Maybe it'll move faster. You know, with Lean In doing so well, we realize people, especially women, are hungry for leadership lessons.
Yes, they really are. So what services do you provide right now?
I'm doing a lot of professional speaking on leadership. I just, in fact, 2 days ago spoke in Atlantic City to 900 city managers from around the world on, as a leader, what leadership traits do you need during a crisis? Was received really well. I have a lot of fun with that. And then I do have my from the battlefield to the boardroom, secrets to lead and succeed presentation that I have been doing to associations. And my goal, being a scuba diver, is to scuba dive the world through speaking.
Oh, what a great what a great goal to have. Scuba dive your way through the world.
Yes.
Well, and how do people get hold of you?
Colonel Jill, ColonelJill.com. And you can watch some of my YouTube, and you can send me an email and reach out to me that way. And, you know, like I said, I'm definitely looking forward to helping men and women lead a lot easier. One interesting statistic is a lot of people are made leaders in their business world around the age of 32, do not receive formal training until they're 42. So I'm out there helping fill that gap of what do you do between the time you're anointed to the time you're actually trained.
Wow. Excellent. Well, I'd like to thank you for being on today's Inspiring Women. Our time has just flown by here. So I do hope you'll think about coming on back when your book comes out.
Oh, thank you, Deanne. Would love it.
Well, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about why women practice self-sabotage and what you can do about it. So stay tuned. This is Deanne DeMarco with today's Inspiring Women.
Friend us on Facebook to keep up with what's empowering the world. Voice America Empowerment.
Want the inside scoop about what's going on in the social networks of art and entertainment? Tune in to Star Power Hour, brought to you by 4talent.com. We'll talk to the top professionals in the entertainment industry and find out what they're working on and what's next. Your host is James Barber, who has his finger on the pulse of the arts and entertainment world. Star Power Hour, brought to you by 4talent.com, live every Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Find out what makes the most successful people tick. Keep listening to the Voice America Empowerment Channel, voiceamericaempowerment.com.
We're tuned into Today's Inspiring Women with Deanne DeMarco. We'd love to hear your questions and comments about our program. Please send an email to Deanne at DeanneDeMarco.com. That's D-E-A-N-N-E at DeanneDeMarco.com. Now, back to Today's Inspiring Women.
Welcome back to Today's Inspiring Women. We're going to be talking with Dr. Patricia regarding self-sabotage and why do women practice it and what to do about it. When it comes to knowing what is going on in the heads of American women, few people can top psychologist Patricia O'Gorman's grasp of the internal dialogue. She dubs it girly thoughts. Unfortunately, many women and girls are saying to themselves, if only I had whiter teeth, I had lost weight, I was blonde, or I was blonder, or I was into some sort of kinky sex or kinky doing something or others, or I wasn't so tired because of the kids that I'm raising, or if my parents hadn't yelled at me, or if I'd quit this job, or if he hadn't cheated on me, or if he hadn't left me, I'd be a much better person. And so we're talking today with Dr. Patricia O'Gorman around why women practice self-sabotage and what to do about it. Welcome, Dr. Patricia.
Well, hello, Deanne. I'm delighted to be on your show.
I'm glad you are with us. I'd like to talk about a little bit of how did you get into studying this field?
Well, I'm a psychologist, and I see men and women every week, and I have been increasingly interested in what women do that's so very different than what men do and how it trips women up. And 19 years ago, believe it or not, I wrote my first book on women and resilience, and called Dancing Backwards in High Heels. And my second book on women and resilience just came out in March called The Resilient Woman, Mastering the 7 Steps to Personal Power. Because I realized the battle wasn't over. Well, women were still not consciously using their resilience. And I came up with the term girly thoughts to explain what it is that we women do that sabotages us.
So one of the things that I have a question around is, why should women strive to be more like Katniss?
Yes,
Katniss.
Yeah.
In the Hunger Game, or my favorite is Beatrice Kiddo in Kill Bill.
Yeah, so two wonderful heroines who wind up in situations which are very difficult, and that what they do is they use all of their skills and develop new ones as they go to help take care of what's in front of them. I love both movies because Hunger Games is also a book, because it's not about somebody who's necessarily going out and seeking fame and glory, but it's about someone who is taking care of business, and in taking care of business winds up doing a very good job. And I think that is most women. Most women take care of business. We use our resilience, but we often use it on behalf of other people and not on behalf of ourselves. And that is what my book is about. It's about how do women really consciously use their resilience to really help make their own life easier. And in that way, we're like these unlikely heroines in The Hunger Game and in Kill Bill, who are going about our lives when something awful happens and we have to deal with it. And that is so much of life for so many of us. Awful things happen and we deal with it. But a resilient woman begins to step in her power and realize, she really has these skills. And that's something guys do much more naturally. It's much easier for a man to see himself as strong. It's much harder for a woman to see herself as strong because it gets in the way of all these societal messages that tell us we're supposed to be sweet and charming and, feminine, but not strong.
So in what ways does society unfairly blame women for some of the challenges that we deal with?
Well, I think you have to go only as far as your checkout counter in your supermarket and look at the tabloids. And there you will see it. You will see how so-and-so has left his wife for a younger woman, or so-and-so has gained weight and therefore her boyfriend has broken up with her. Or, we have all of this
pressure on women about looks. And it used to be that, you know, women would strive to be size 2, and even if they couldn't get to be 5'10", they would get to be 5'2". Well, with all the photoshopping that's going on, even the models don't look like themselves. I had a woman in a radio interview a couple of months ago on a call-in show call in and say that she was a model. So, of course, I developed, you know, immediately had my fantasy of what she looked like. And she said, but unfortunately, every morning I get up and I look in the mirror and I feel depressed that I don't look like me. And my heart sank.
Oh, dear.
And she said, is that my girly thoughts? I said, yes. Here she is. She's a model. And she's depressed because she doesn't look like the Photoshop version of herself. Now, that's a level of oppression that is pretty significant that women suffer from in our society. And it's constant. It's constant in the media. It's constant in the tabloids. It's just, you know, it's we don't celebrate strong women. We celebrate beautiful women, and they can never be beautiful enough.
Wow. So what can we do about that?
Well, I think the answer to girly thoughts is to consciously develop your resilience so you are using your skills to take care of yourself. And in my book, The Resilient Woman, Mastering the 7 Steps to Personal Power, I talk to women about the 7 steps they can take to really conquer the girly thoughts and begin to step into their power. Just like we heard in our previous guest, who talked about how hard it is for women to really acknowledge what they do, I think a key factor in making it easier to acknowledge what we do and take credit for what we do is to acknowledge the power that we have. And again, it's so often that the power we have, we use for our children, we use for our job, we use to keep our home together, but we don't walk around feeling particularly powerful because we're so gosh darn tired. So, you know, I talk about the 7 steps women can use.
So why does, not, you know, our parents, at least my parents, taught me to be a good girl, play nice. So why does not being a good girl give women the rewards that they seek?
Well, because part of the good girl fantasy is also built on all the fairy tales we received, which was, you know, we need to be beautiful, young, fragile young woman who needs to be rescued. So all the fairy tales, all the princess is always rescued by the handsome prince. And then her reward comes from being the good girl, you know, from Cinderella, who's the good, dutiful daughter, you know, to Snow White. I mean, and the reality is that we hold out for this. We live our lives hoping, you know, that we will be rewarded because we are so wonderfully good, and we just sabotage our ability to make our own way in the world and to feel good about our accomplishments because we're waiting for someone else to give us credit. We need to give ourselves credit, and we need to give each other credit, something that women are more reluctant and less used to doing.
Interesting. So the other question I have is, women tend to be pretty harsh in judging other women. What compels us to do that?
Well, I think part of that has to do with the fact that as women, we're kind of set up to compete against each other because we feel other women are somehow threatening to us, and we haven't learned to play on teams the way men play on teams, where they can, ruggedly attack each other in a rugby game and then go out and, you know, party together afterwards. We take it very personally, and we have to learn, you know, that it's not personal, that we can be strong and we can disagree with people and still be on teams with people, but that means, it doesn't mean we have to be everyone's best friend. And part of that is women, I think, being newer to the workplace, newer to major positions. And it also has to do, quite honestly, with the oppression of women that has gone on for quite a long time in our society and in other societies. And one sign that a group is oppressed is you no longer need the guns to get the behavior. People do it on their own. And yeah. Women we're our own worst enemies with this. And the good news is that's a learned behavior, and what's been learned one way, we can learn another way.
So I've got a question for you. Does women playing sports, does that help in learning how to be more resilient?
Well, I think it learns how to be more consciously resilient, because when you play sports, you play a position, you play on a team, and you know what your skill base is, and you own it. Like you own third base, you know, that's your base. And I think that is helping women be more consciously resilient. The thing is, women are resilient, we just don't know it, so we don't use it. But I think that playing sports is certainly a major step because of all the social learning and self-learning it teaches to be able to play a sport and play it effectively. Especially team sports, but even individual sports like track and field. You know, if you win the race, you know, gosh darn it, you won that race. You know.
Yeah, it hasn't been that long that women have really been playing. You know,
no.
Team sports. You know, even professional women's sports are not recognized as being at the same status as men's.
Absolutely not. I mean, we've just gone through March Madness, and even though there was the, you know, female version of March Madness, that wasn't particularly reported on. You know, all the male teams get reported on, and, you know, and I love watching basketball, so, you know, I love, you know, but it's not quite there yet, and it's only recently that we've even had the ability for women to have support within their colleges and within their high schools, and to actually be funded to play female sports. I mean, all this is so recent. And I think we've made incredible strides that, you know, since we fought for, and, you know, 100 years ago, and we got the vote, and we fought for, and we just received combat pay this year. You know, so it's 100 years later, but, you know, we're getting there. We're getting there. Yeah. And but we do need to, be able to strut our stuff. You know, we need to be able to say, as your previous caller said, you know, we did this. We earned this. This is what we can do. And we know it, but we're all such good girls. We don't want to be self-centered. We don't want to be selfish. And instead, we become selfless. And that's not helpful to us. It's not helpful to our children. And it's not necessarily helpful at our job. So being resilient is about, you know, conscious, you know, I have the seven steps. My first step is
we're going to take a quick break here.
Okay.
So when we come back, I'd like to learn a little bit more about the seven steps and what we can do as women to become a little bit more resilient. But we need to take a quick break right now.
Okay.
All right, great. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about resilience with Dr. Patricia here. And this is Deanne DeMarco with today's Inspiring Women.
Find out what makes the most successful people tick. Keep listening to the Voice America Empowerment Channel. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
All the changes you make in your life are positive, whether you realize it or not. And you can continue to create even more change to improve your life by tuning in to Pure Talk Radio with host Bonnie Wirth. Bonnie sees everything as a learning life experience, and it only gets better as you go. Embrace life with the passion and enthusiasm it was meant to be lived with. Learn and become inspired. Listen to Pure Talk Radio every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Success starts here. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. It's your world.
You are tuned into Today's Inspiring Women with Deanne DeMarco. We'd love to hear your questions and comments about our program. Please send an email to Deanne at DeanneDeMarco.com. That's D-E-A-N-N-E at DeanneDeMarco.com. Now, back to today's Inspiring Women.
This is Deanne DeMarco with today's Inspiring Women, and we are speaking to Dr. Patricia on women who promote self-sabotage and becoming more resilient and what we can do about it. So, Dr. Pat, tell us a little bit more about, A, what is resilience, and what are those seven steps that we can do to become more resilient?
Well, what resiliency is the ability to bounce back from some adverse thing that happened to you, which means something has happened and resiliency is your positive response to it. It's what you learn from it. It's how you internalize and try to make it not happen again. Resiliency are those skills we learn under really difficult circumstances that really help shape who we are and move us in directions sometimes that we never thought we would go in. So resiliency is a dynamic quality, and it happens when we get hit upside the head and we come out of it. So. And life is full of that. You know, I wish it wasn't, maybe, but life is full of that from natural, crises women go through, such as pregnancy and childbirth, to awful situations that women find themselves in. Life is full of challenges. We're going to respond. So can we respond in a way that really helps move us forward in developing skills and strengths? So with some crises, we don't have to go through them again. So the first step I have in my book, The Resilient Woman, is to make your crisis meaningful and choose to develop conscious resilience. And people have asked, why did you start your book with a step on crisis? And my answer is, it's because women only begin to notice things, and many times about themselves, when they're in a crisis. You tell a woman to, you know, relax, take a deep breath, you know, pamper herself a little, and she never has time. But in a crisis, so that gets her attention. So that's why I started the book. You know, make your crisis meaningful, learn from it, and maybe you don't have to repeat it. We are doomed to repeat those things we don't learn from. That's step one, is to really make your crisis meaningful. Number two is to really start listening to yourself. I call it your hidden resilient voice. Use your own wisdom to determine what's right for you. In all of us, we have many voices. I'm currently in Florida, and I'm doing some staff training here at a treatment center called Lifescape Solutions that is looking to use my book to develop treatment strategies for women. So I just did an exercise with staff today, and I had them listen for 30 seconds to what was in their brain. You know, just what are the conversations going on in our brain? And, you know, there were people in there, you know, having a conversation with their supervisor, with their husband, with their children. You know, it's like you dip in, and there are all these conversations going on. And some people also were having a conversation with themselves about what it is they needed, you know. One woman said, I really realized I really need to go to the restroom. So it's, you know, but we don't take time to listen to what we need. As women, we tend to focus on what it is we need to do. And in that way, we can learn more from men, because men tend to give themselves a little bit more space about what it is they need to do and what it is they want to do. And women tend to be much more focused on what it is they have to do. And so the second step is really about listening to that little voice inside of you, which, granted, may complicate your life. You know, listening to what you need and want may surprise people, but it may mean you live longer and that you live happier. So that is, you know, that is step two. And step three is to create helpful boundaries. When I was writing the book, my editor crossed it out and put in healthy, and I crossed it out and I said, no, it's helpful. And she said, okay, we got to talk about this. And the reason why I used the word helpful boundaries is that I think women have become oppressed by needing to be healthy and oppressed by needing to be normal, and they don't think about what's working for them. They just think about how they're not meeting, again, some artificial goal that somebody has set. So I recommend that women really look and ask themselves, is this helpful for me to do or is it not helpful for me to do? Last week I had some dental work. My mouth was killing me. I was thinking, I needed to eat something. What could I have for dinner? And I thought, okay, raviolis, they're soft, they're delicious, and I don't usually eat them. So I decided it would be helpful to have a nice ravioli dinner with some pesto sauce. That was helpful for me. Now, it wouldn't be helpful if I ate that way every day, but it was helpful for me to listen to myself and have that on the day of all this dental work I had done. So what is helpful to us? And to give ourselves permission to really act on what is helpful. And when we don't do that, we set ourselves up. When we don't create helpful boundaries, we set ourselves up, and then we get annoyed, and we get angry, and we get depressed, and then we start dealing with that however we deal with being angry at ourselves. You know, we either start exercising all the time, or eating too much, or drinking, or drugging, or, you know, anesthetizing ourselves in some manner because we're so furious and we don't know what to do. And so if we start with how can I be helpful, then it makes life, I think, a heck of a lot easier.
I like that.
Yeah. And you know, step four is protect your heart, love resiliently. I was in Las Vegas recently for a conference, and I decided that women tend to love like they gamble. They throw it all on the table. You know, we've got to keep some of our love for ourselves and make sure that there continues to be two people in a marriage or two people in a relationship, and that we don't move from, you know, being this kind of lovely, lively person to being this self-sacrificing person who becomes pretty uninteresting. I do so much couple counseling, and inevitably I will hear a man say, "She's not the woman I married. You know, the woman I married was exciting, she was feisty, she was this, she was that. You know, this woman is just kind of like wrung out." Now, of course, he may have a role in that, but she has a role in that too. You know, how do we let ourselves get there? You know, so we need to love ourselves in whatever relationship we're in, and not just to have all of our compassion and love and energy devoted to our children, our job, our husband. We got to keep us in there as part of the equation. Step five is to realize we can be strong in our hurt places, that we can heal ourselves. Our body naturally heals itself, and if we're wounded deeply enough, we actually develop a scar. And what is a scar but kind of extra attention going to the place that's been hurt? Well, we can do that psychologically too. We can give ourselves some extra attention where we've been hurt. And that's something we do. It's not something someone gives us. This is something we do. And step six is to think positively. I think it's the best revenge. Somebody has hurt you, you can still be positive. You know, you
don't
have
hard.
Oh, yes, it is. It is hard. But one of the tricks to living is not taking the nonsense we get from others personally, and to realize much of what we get from other people is really about them. It's not about us. And, you know, it's very humbling to realize that. But if you realize that, then you realize you don't really have to take it on either. But that is about them. It's whatever it is, it's about them. But it's not about you. It doesn't define your self-worth.
Yeah,
so it's freeing up. And the last step is to realize gratitude for who you are and what you have learned, that our road to developing resiliency has defined us. The challenges and how we have met them in our life have helped shape us. And we are who we are, and we can celebrate that. And realize how pretty kind of unique and terrific each one of us is. So,
I like all of these. I like all of these different steps, and all of them for different ways. I like the helpful boundaries and protect your heart and think positively, which is the best way of revenge. That almost reminds me of a, I'm not an AA person, but isn't there something about letting go of problems and not carrying those resentments with you and to think positively?
Yes, yeah. Many of the recovery programs, yeah, talk about that. Yeah, yeah. Kind of freeing. It's all about how do we free ourselves up from all those shackles we impose on ourselves.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
If a woman doesn't become resilient, can it lead to mental health issues?
I think so, because if we don't develop the ability to kind of tackles the stuff that comes our way, even if we don't look for it, it's there. You know, it's there. You're pulling out of the supermarket, you know, in your car and someone rams into you. You know, it's there. If we don't develop that, then we tend to be overwhelmed. And certainly prolonged periods of being overwhelmed are not good for us. And when we're overwhelmed, that means we don't have access to our skills and strengths, and that can certainly lead to depression. And we know that depression is a major issue that women deal with. You know, it's just, you know, that's go, because we don't express things outward. We tend to collect and collapse inward. We implode as opposed to explode. And, you know, that's set up for depression. So that's a really good question.
Wow. Yeah, I would think that that could be very problematic. Well, again, tell us again what the services you provide, and besides being a psychologist, which is huge, what are the services that you provide?
Well, I do.
And
I do
how do
a
people
lot of,
get hold of you?
Okay, well, I do speaking to mixed groups about girly thoughts. I was just in Buffalo, and had the men were laughing harder at girly thoughts than the than the women, even, especially when I talked about the relationship between men doing household work and an increase in sexuality in long-term marriages. The men got that one. So I speak, I consult, and people can reach me through my website, which is Patricia O'Gorman, PatriciaOGorman.com.
That's wonderful. And do you have a phone number, or just have them reach you through your website? Or
I think I travel so much, it's better just to reach me through my website, Patricia.
And then you have a contact us on your website?
Yep. They contact me, and the name of my book is The Resilient Woman, Mastering the 7 Steps to Personal Power.
And how do people get hold of that book?
It's available online. Through your major distributors online, through the publisher, HCI, and in your bricks and mortar bookstore, which we still
Wonderful.
Have some.
Excellent. Well, I'd like to thank you for being on today's Inspiring Women.
Well, thank you so much, Diane. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Well, this show is provided by Breaking Boundaries International. Breaking Boundaries provides personalized coaching and corporate training services to business professionals and organizations. If you are looking to break through your personal boundaries and career roadblocks, Breaking Boundaries International can help. Breaking Boundaries International has won national recognition from Training Magazine's Top 100 for their coaching clinic management programs. And their services include executive and personal coaching, corporate training for managers. And Breaking Boundaries can provide a motivational business speaker for your next business meeting or conference. They can be reached at www.breaking-boundaries.com or call them at 866-91-COACH. In ending today's show, I would like to leave you with a short quote from Ann Landers. And Ann Landers has said, opportunities are usually disguised as hard work, so most people don't recognize them, which I think is very, very true. Well, you are listening to today's Inspiring Women. Each week we address relevant topics for women to spark your career and life growth. Thank you for tuning in today. I'm your host, Deanne DeMarco. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Today's Inspiring Women. Please join host Deanne DeMarco and other entrepreneurial and business leaders next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Have an outstanding week.